From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 13th day of October 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds will be here, too, to take a look at the cash grain market. And we'll discuss again with Daryl Good, really here, just a couple of sound bites from the conversation you heard yesterday about the corn and soybean production numbers released by USDA and what it means for your marketing over the next several months. We'll do that along with taking a look at the weather forecast. Mike Tenora will be here as we close out our time together. He, of course, is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. It all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Please do visit our website, willag.org. You're getting through the harvest season really quickly now and should be open weather on and off. Should be a good finish to the season, I would think. And I'd like you to pick up a ticket to the first winter meeting. That's November the 22nd at the Marriott Hotel in Normal, Illinois. Just $30, and we'll have a great day there. Have a bunch of our analysts on hand. We'll take a look forward at the 2018 Farm Bill, which may come as soon as 2017. Get your thoughts on that as well. There'll be a listening session that the associations will be involved in. Should be a fantastic day. It's just $30. Go right now and pick your ticket up there at willag.org. Just hit buy your ticket now. Let's turn our attention to what happened in Chicago. We're joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. What a day in Chicago, Dan. I don't know, maybe you expected it, but boy, after the corn and the soybeans and the wheat all posted key reversals lower yesterday, there probably weren't many that were thinking we'd have such a rally in Chicago today. Why did it happen?
Well, I think to start with, the crop report did not meet bearish expectations. Now, I know we did close lower yesterday after we were higher earlier, but as soon as the market showed that it failed to have any downside follow through in the overnight session, that was a clear warning that the shorts that went into the market late in the day were in trouble, and either they had to cover or they were going to have to send some money to Chicago. And the technical crowd, when they saw that, they immediately started probing the long side early in the day, and you could just see that there was just nothing on top of it, and then it just built momentum as the day went on. And down here in Texas, this is county fair season here in Texas, and we have what we call the Heart of Texas Fair going on, and the rodeo was last night, and I went in and saw the rodeo, so I got to see another rodeo here today, I guess. So, and you look at it, corn posted its highest close of the fall. Were actually the best close since middle part of July. People are probably scratching their heads, but seasonally, the corn market went counter-seasonally higher during September, and now that has extended on into when you normally get seasonal strength. So that makes a counter-seasonal rally all the stronger because it was able to move higher going upstream, and now it's going downstream, so that makes it easier to go higher. So I think today's a good statement that pretty well tells you that when you have prices below cost production, you got to be careful on how bearish you want to be. And I think for the most part, farmer selling has been very light. I think only selling that has really occurred so far as maybe early sales. But otherwise, farmers can't make any money down here, even with the better yields. It still bleeds red. And I think there'll be tough holders of inventory. And that's one of the reasons why you get no follow-through. The other thing is, and I've been saying this for some time, is the end user, whether you want to call him the exporter, whether or not you want to call him a domestic user, but the bigger grain companies, commercial grain companies that deal with exports and consumption of grain, they don't have their needs covered. They have been anticipating that this big crop would push prices sharply lower, and they were hoping that they would be able to just scoop it up pretty cheap. And I think they're finding out we're already nearing probably the halfway mark on harvest, depending upon what Monday says, but we'll probably be halfway through harvest by Monday. And seasonally, like I said, this is the time of year when the seasonality of the markets begin to move upwards. And today was a classic performance of what happens when the seasonal turns up after you have a seasonal low posted in commodities. Even look at the wheat market up 18 cents. Actually, wheat gave me a weekly buy signal here today. So all of your technical trend following systems that a lot of your technical traders follow, they've all got the green light on. Now, how long they keep the green light on, we'll have to wait and see on it. But at least for now, I think you have to say today is a very, very impressive move. I don't know if I caught that your weekend is open on your weather forecast or not, but we may see a little bit of hedge pressure set in after today's rally. So we'll probably start out lower in the overnight trade, and we'll see what happens here on Friday. But we still, I think you guys are still calling for some 80-degree temperatures up there, aren't you?
We are indeed on Sunday and Monday, 85, I think. I'd have to go back and look at that forecast. I read them so quickly sometimes I don't catch them all. Yes.
Well, we haven't
80
turned
Sunday,
off.
85, 86 on Monday, 84 on Tuesday. So they just updated, in fact, the forecast.
But we're 10 degrees warmer, so we're going to be in the mid-90s next week. So we haven't turned off our air conditioners yet.
Hey, so I've got a question for you then, and I think most producers will be thinking about this. It's a big crop. They can't store it all, of course, in their own bins. Some of it has gone to town. They don't want to sell it now. They're going to pay the storage, but they'll be willing probably at some point, maybe even before January, to let some of that go, I think. What should they aim for?
Well, those are good questions. I mean, I think... first of all, they should try to ignore the bushel price and look and try to market their grain this year by revenue per acre. And I know some people's got the better yields than others, but don't get too wound up in the bushel price. You got to look at that gross acre revenue and what you need to come out of there with a reasonable profit. And market your grain that way. And then if you want to replace it with a call option to protect yourself from upside potential as we go on into the 17 growing season, I think that would be a wise move. Now, technically, if I throw out the balance sheets and the fundamentals, I still got these corn going to 370 based upon the head and shoulders bottom formation. We've had a little rodeo action since we crossed that neckline. I think a week ago when I talked to you, we fell back to the neckline after we broke out, and then the market regrouped and it rallied, and then yesterday we went back down to it, and then today we've cleared the hurdle and made new highs for the move this fall. So based upon that head and shoulders objective, I think these corn has a shot at 370. Now, I want to emphasize, everybody, that is a technician talking. That's not a fundamentalist talking. It's a technician talking. So I guess if I was in the market advisory business and I was going to give a farmer some price ranges to shoot for, I'd probably be looking at something in the 360 to 380 range on corn. I think you've got 3 weeks, 4 weeks to see if that can be attained. Maybe this market might want to regroup here and rally all the way into the first part of November or the November crop report. I still think there's people having difficulty believing USDA's numbers are correct, especially on corn. It doesn't jive with what I've been hearing on the phone, but it is what it is, and until it's changed, you got to play by those numbers. But seasonally, when beans make a low, and I don't think you can really solidify that beans have made a low. I think corn and wheat have got some seasonal lows in place. Beans is still more of a sideways affair here. We'll see how much follow-through we get tomorrow and maybe into early next week if we can confirm a seasonal upturn in soybeans. But for the most part, I think, you know, from a technician speaking, we've got some upside potential in here. And naturally, everybody's bearish because of the big crowd. I think farmers are a little bullish because they're hanging on to it. They're, at least they don't want to part with it at these prices, and I don't necessarily blame them, but I do think that at some point in time, we all know that a group of them will need some cash come December 1, if not January 1, so there will be some movement of grain as we come in. But I think right now the end user is shorter than the farmer is along the corn that has to sell it into the marketplace, so I think we got some room in here for this market to try to rally and try to pull some of that inventory out of the country.
Hey, it's always good to talk to you. Thanks so much. Have a great week.
Very well, Todd.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, the Environmental Working Group has made its first big splash in the 2018 Farm Bill debate, releasing a report this morning that argues farmers should be required to adopt water quality practices and conservation approaches in order to receive commodity and subsidy payments. As expected, farm groups and even some environmental advocates disagree with EWG. Farmers, they say, are the original conservationists. They want to take care of their land. They want to do the right thing. And they're going to participate in programs that make sense to them because they want to. That according to Callie Eidenberg, Senior Policy Manager for Sustainable Agriculture at the Environmental Defense Fund. She goes on to say, when you talk about forcing farmers to do something, especially in the conservation world, it takes away that enthusiasm. Well, let's stay with the environment, but come back to something at hand today. Estimates are that flooding has killed tens of thousands of livestock in North Carolina. As a result of Hurricane Matthew, Governor Pat McCrory said officials would work to clean up the carcasses as fast as possible to avoid freshwater contamination and a potential public health threat. A Washington Post article says the state is trying to avoid a similar problem that experienced back in 1999 when thousands of dead hogs and chickens floated for days in the flooded waters from Hurricane Floyd. The governor added that a lot of animals have died in the thousands. Matthew Starr of the Waterkeeper Alliance said photos show floodwaters up to the roofs of barns, and in his words, the flooding is quite terrible. Brian Long of the North Carolina Department of Agriculture said they have not received any reports of waste lagoons breached by floodwater, but it's a huge concern. It's not just bad news for livestock farmers. Crop farmers lost millions of dollars in crops for the second year in a row, too. 10 straight days of rains in 2015 ruined the harvest in eastern North Carolina. One final livestock note for the news today. Northeast Brazil poultry producers will not be buying any U.S. corn in the short term as they have most of what they need booked. This is in spite of the government's decision to allow some genetically modified corn shipments from the U.S. into the country. Many producers already have deals in place to ship corn from Argentina, even though freight costs to ship corn from the U.S. Gulf Coast are less than bringing it in from Argentina. Brazil officials have ruled out shipments coming in from the United States. Some of the trade talks says Argentina can only supply Brazil with corn through February of 2017. 15 total shipments are booked to come into Brazil, but officials say another 12 shipments may be needed before Brazil begins harvesting its own corn crop. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. The United States Department of Agriculture has reported the size of this year's soybean crop, and for the second month in a row, it has increased the size of what was already a record breaker. That trend is likely to continue. USDA, in its October crop production report, raised the average national soybean yield by 0.8 of a bushel. Now it stands at 51.4 bushels to the acre and about 4.3 billion bushels strong. It's already a serious record breaker, but not likely big enough yet, says University of Illinois agricultural economist Darrell Good.
Well, I think taking all the evidence together, saying now we got bigger in September, we got bigger in October, on soybeans, and the crop is already very big, I think would point to another small increase in the yield forecast in November and perhaps in January as well. So maybe not by a lot, but I certainly wouldn't expect the number to come down from what we're looking at right now.
However, even in the face of a record crop, the price of soybeans has remained fairly strong. This tells Darrell Good farmers should be a little patient as they contemplate when to sell. It might be worth waiting to see how the South American crop unfolds. Although the U of I number cruncher does have a few caveats.
If I had to choose to sell one or the other, I would still be a seller of soybeans because of the returns that the current price is offering for those that have above average yields this year. It's still a fairly large gross income. So I think from a risk management standpoint, would lean you towards selling soybeans and still maybe a little more holding on corn.
For reference, USDA has established this month the expected midpoint national cash price received for soybeans by farmers from now until next fall at $9.05, with corn at $3.25 and wheat at $3.70. You may read Darrell Good's thoughts on the markets each Monday afternoon on the Farm Doc Daily website. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Let's check in with Matt Bennett now. He's from Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds. And if I don't miss my guess, Matt, you must be running, and I would think maybe in soybean this afternoon. Is that right?
Well, we got a little bit of rain yesterday, so my dad wanted to switch over to corn today.
All right. So how's the corn then?
We got about a day and a half of corn and maybe a day of beans. So we're actually knocking on the door right now. We're pretty close to being done.
You've been happy with your yields all along?
Yes. I mean, as we talked about early, the corn yields were really good. We felt,
did you have
felt
one field
great
that
about them.
Did you have
no,
one field
no actually, I was just thinking the beans, you know, I've got one farm, you know, that's a little bit lighter and several acres, and it's usually kind of my make or break farm. And I was hoping the beans would end up at 60, and they were almost 70. So we were really happy with that. Our bean yields have been nothing short of phenomenal. So we've been thrilled with the beans and quite happy with the corn as well.
It's been a couple of unique days in the futures markets, given the USDA's reports yesterday, the key reversals down, and then the move up today. How do you take it all in?
You know, yesterday I was thinking with the yield that we saw in soybeans, the verification of that, you know, almost 51 and a half yield, I thought we would be lower and then we'd turn around and go higher later on based upon people looking at demand and seeing maybe the carryout wasn't quite as big as what the trade was guessing. But instead, you know, you race higher and then you close lower on a reversal, and then you come in today and the grains led the soybean market back up. It's quite an interesting trade. But I think there's a lot of bottom picking going on. As far as corn goes, I think guys are getting out of their short. Some positions are. And then with soybeans, obviously they didn't want to, they want to keep their long positions intact. Sold some yesterday, picked some back up today.
So is this simply a matter of farmers not selling across the scale for corn and they're just hunting down bushels at this time?
No. I think there's been a fair amount of farmers actually selling across the scale and re-owning. I think most are in the idea that definitely want to be owning corn and beans as much as they can. I've been telling them, keep your bins full, you know, as far as the corn goes. I want to store every bushel in my bins at home with corn. And if I need the money, I definitely want to be selling beans at the yields that we're getting. We're locking in one heck of a profit. And, you know, if you want to throw 20, 25 cents at an option spread or some sort of a long play on a limited risk basis, as far as those beans go that you sold, I think it's a good idea because I think today's a good reminder that it's pretty tough to outguess this bean market. The demand is so strong that you always have a chance to reap some reward out of a long position.
Why do you think demand remains so strong? Is it just the lack of soybeans coming out of South America?
Well, I think that's part of it. You know, China has an insatiable demand. You know, whenever you're in ownership of half the world's pigs and the population is quite fond of pork, you know, and you've got the world's largest population, it's pretty easy to figure out why they want so many soybeans. So South American situation would suggest that our exports will remain quite strong up until their first crop comes online. And then we have to be a little bit cautious, especially with our dollar being so strong here recently. If we continue to see that strength, once their first crop comes online, we can't make any assumptions that our exports are going to be near as strong throughout the marketing year as what they were for 15-16.
Hey, thanks so much for talking to me. Good luck with finishing up. And when we talk with you next Thursday, I expect we'll not talk with you while you're in the combine. I think this is probably the fourth week we've talked with you in the combine. So we appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, Todd.
And, of course, is Matt Bennett. He's been at Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for a Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenor is here now. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome, Todd. Great to be here.
This is the day that the National Weather Service releases its update of El Nino events, and I'm wondering if there's any news in the latest release.
There's not too much different about this month's report versus last month's, except to say that there is some higher confidence regarding the probability for neutral conditions to continue over the next several months. What that means is that we won't have an El Nino like we had last year, where the Pacific Ocean temperatures are much higher than normal, and we also are unlikely to have a La Nina event, which is where those same waters are much cooler than normal.
Does it tell us anything about the South American crop as it goes into its planting season?
We would argue that it doesn't mean too much, and here's the reason why. If you just isolate out Brazil's soybean yields since 2003, and then you look at which of those crops were the worst, we end up with the growing seasons of 2004, 2005, 2009 and 2012. So those were the years that had some pretty poor soybean crops. Well, two of those years had neutral conditions like we expect this year. That was in the 2004-05 growing season and the 2008-09 growing season. But also two of the worst yields on record happened in El Nino years, with that being in 2003-04 and 2011 into 2012. So what this means to us as a weather forecasting firm is that it would be a bad idea to start saying that we have a high probability for a certain type of weather coming in, because we know from the past that we had some bad yields in a couple of different types of oceanic situations, and the one that we're going into for the next few months doesn't really lend support to either a good scenario or a bad scenario, with pretty much all options on the table as we move forward.
Given that, we've been watching the progress in South America, both Argentina and Brazil. They were waiting for rains, and they've been getting them.
They have been getting some rains, especially in the last few days from Argentina into southern Brazil and Paraguay. The potential problem is that there are more rains on the horizon, and it looks like a lot more rain for some of these areas. In particular, northeast Argentina into far southern Brazil and into parts of Paraguay should see anywhere from 4 to 8 inches of rain, and maybe even a little bit more than that in parts of Rio Grande do Sul. Rio Grande do Sul is the main wheat production state in Brazil. And even though Brazil is a pretty minor player in the wheat world, this is not the best situation because wheat there is maturing and should be harvesting, in the harvesting phase at least, fairly soon. So a lot of rain right prior to harvest is not the ideal scenario for them. And on top of that, they're planting corn and soybeans.
Mike, thanks so much for taking the time with me today. That, of course, is Mike Tenor. He's with T-Storm Weather Out of Chicago, I'm Todd Gleason.